Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome along to Writer's Routine. This week, we're taking a look inside the working day of Louise Hare to see how she gets stuff done. Now, her debut is This Lovely City. It's an exploration of race and identity in post-Windrush London. We find out how it developed from a short story written in a creative writing course. Also, we talk about how a trip underground into a hidden part of London helped inspire her, and we learn about how she's finding the leap from part-time writing to having the full day at your liberty.
What I've tried to do is set myself word counts for each day.
Okay.
And again, if I hit it by 10 a.m, great, I've got the rest of the day off and I can just go out or binge Netflix or something. So I've been trying to do that.
What's the magic number that you are trying to hit every day?
So I'm trying to do 2,000. Okay. Bear in mind, I've got a whole day, so that's sort of... And I'm editing at the moment, so it's actually quite easy to do that, because I'm not necessarily doing new words, I'm just doing different words, if that makes sense. So that seems to be working. So I'm hoping to get that draft finished by the end of this month, which I'm on track to do.
So stick around, it's all on the way with Louise Hare in this week's Writer's Routine. Yes, welcome along. It's Writer's Routine, the show where we take a sneak peek inside the working day of some of the world's best writers to hopefully steal some of their scheduling secrets. How do they take an idea from their head and plan their day to get it down onto paper? Now, I guess, you know, how are you coping then? Are you stuck inside? Are you working from home? I am hashtag self-isolating, or semi-self-isolating. I'm kind of eking it out as long as I can, I think, until any lockdown might happen. And I know that so many authors' events have been cancelled. If that's one of yours, I can only imagine how awful that must be. All the excitement and then the release must be a little bit underwhelming. I'm really sorry about that. So we'll try and keep going. We'll try and keep the show going. If you have published a book recently and you've lost one of the means to tell people about it, let me know. I'll give so many shout-outs to new authors, debut authors. I'll give so many shout-outs to work that you're publishing. If you've not had the chance yet, just send an email over to the contact page at writersroutine.com and I will do what I can. Now, without making light of this terrible situation, being stuck at home, I mean, it isn't fun, it isn't what we need, but I'm thinking maybe the boredom, maybe there is a silver lining in it. Maybe that time spent with nothing to do can finally give you the space that you need to at last finish the book. If that is you, we'll be here every week if we can, touch wood, for that inspiration that you need. And remember, there's a full backlog that you can check out. If you're new to the show, there's over almost 100 episodes, some of the best authors on the planet giving their tips and tricks for getting their ideas down. They will always help you out. So go and have a look. It's writersroutine.com. Now, this week, our guest is Louise Hare. Her debut novel is This Lovely City. It's due to be one of the reads of the summer. It's all about post-Windrush Brixton. Now, Brixton, if you're not aware, is an area of London with a huge Caribbean heritage. Many of the people who lived there during the 50s and 60s and 70s would have arrived on board the ship Empire Windrush. that brought people over from the Caribbean. Now, the book tells the story of the jazz musician Laurie Matthews, who makes a terrible discovery which threatens to tear the city apart. Now, we talk about how Louise has worked on this idea over time, why this one got her published when others before have failed. We learn what she learned in her creative writing course, how much she hopes to get done in a day, but how she's finding full-time writing. It's all on the way. And we start off, as always, with what Louise sees around her in the place where she sits down to write.
I write in my flat, so I've got a desk pushed up against the wall. And then what I have at the moment, because I'm really lazy, and I probably should have changed this because I'm writing my second book now, but I've still got lots of pictures that I had up for this lovely city. So I found loads of photographs of sort of Windrush passengers sort of when they first arrived, and I just printed loads out. There were loads on the Guardian website to do with the sort of Windrush scandal, so I just printed loads of those out and stuck them all round as like inspiration.
Is that what they helped you do? It wasn't necessarily story based. Were you basing your characters on some of these people, or are they just helping you evoke the time?
Yeah, it was just really to get into the period, to sort of visualise what my characters, it's more in terms of what they were wearing, I think, because at that point the characters were already kind of fully formed, but it was more just picturing what people were doing, like walking around, people on trains, and just, yeah, sort of just general, you know, this is what I'm kind of sitting down to do, is write this book about these people. And
so you've got these pictures. Is there any other bits of inspiration around you that help you tell your story?
My desk is really, really messy, like to the point where things fall off it because things are piled up. So I do tend to have sort of books hanging around, like The Lonely Londoners, Sam Selvin, that I read at the very early stage of writing the first draft, again, just to get into like the mindset of what it was like to be in the 1950s in London and be an immigrant. And I kept that to hand, so sometimes I'd just sort of flick through before I started writing, just to get back into the mindset again. So yeah, just general.
Away from inspiration, is there much plotting that I could see around you? I mean, if I were to sit down in your writing space now, would I have any idea as to what you were writing and at what point you were writing it?
You would have no idea, because I'm really bad at plotting. Okay. I always try to plot. And I might have a few things, like for this lovely city I knew what the book started with. I knew, because it starts with a crime, so I knew who had done it, I knew why. So I knew those bits, but I had no idea what was going to happen in the middle. It probably would have been helpful to know before I started writing, but the characters informed a lot of the plot, actually.
Yeah.
And a lot of it changed, so there's a lot of redrafting with this novel.
Amazing.
As I went along,
I think we'll unpack that quite significantly. But are you using post for the minimal bits of plotting that you do? Is it post-it notes? Is it whiteboards? Is it cork boards?
I just tend to have like a notebook hanging around, and I just jot bits and bobs down, see how it sort of pans out. I mean, sometimes it's quite cryptic. I tend to like have a lot of ideas just as I'm about to fall asleep. I'm like, oh, let me write this down. And then it's like, you get to it next morning, you're like, what does that mean?
It's a knackered scrawl, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Or just sometimes, you know, it's legible, but I'm like, that still doesn't make any sense. Like, you've just written like four words, and I'm like, sometimes it does make sense. Sometimes I've actually come up with characters that way, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's actually a good idea. Let me incorporate that. But yeah, my notebooks are, again, a bit of a mess, bit of random sort of research bits and bobs.
Are the ideas that you do get down just before you drift off, are they as good the next day as they always seem to be, the moment you have to write them down that second?
Yeah, it really varies. And the other thing is that sometimes I write them down and then the next day I'm like, yeah, okay, that still makes sense. But then when I come to sort of maybe a week or 2 weeks later, actually look at how that would fit into the book, I'm like, actually, it's a good idea, but it doesn't actually fit. So it just really, it varies. I mean, if I didn't write it down, I'd always be thinking, oh my God, what was that idea that I had? So at least it gets rid of that sort of worry that you missed out on some kind of like genius idea.
Because I'm always a bit skeptical over the idea that we have our best ideas in the middle of the night. Mm. I've heard a lot of people talk about this, and I know that every time I've, like you, when I write down something in the middle of the night and the next morning, if I can understand it, often it's no way is it good enough that I should have dragged myself out of bed at 2 a.m. for what I find.
It does vary. Sometimes, like, I've had a couple, I would say two.
Okay.
Two ideas that were just about to fall asleep and I had to turn the light back on and write it down that have actually really panned out. And I was, like, really happy that I wrote them down. But I think for the most part, actually going for a walk, when I get really stuck, you know, like, because again, I don't plot properly. So quite often I'm like, this character's gone from A to C. Like, what's the B? Kind of thing, like what, and I'm just trying to work out, okay, how are they getting from here to here? That's often something that I struggle with. And I just find sometimes going for a walk or going to the gym, just something that just shuts your thinking part of your brain down a little bit. Sometimes it just suddenly like opens up and you have this sort of epiphany. Like, oh my God, of course, it'd be something really simple. And it's just that you couldn't, when you're trying to think really hard about something, it's just like it won't come. But I do find, I guess that's kind of the same when you're about to fall asleep. It's the same thing, but it tends to be a bit more coherent when it happens in the middle of the day. It's just changed because actually I've just stopped work for a bit to sort of do stuff for this book. And actually it's not really a routine. It's a bit of a mess. But I'm only 2 weeks into it, so I'm sure I'll figure it out. But when I was writing this book, I was doing a lot of things. I was working full time. I was also doing an MA in creative writing, so I had lots of work to do for that that was separate to this book. And then obviously I had to get this book finished. So what I found sort of worked for me was getting up maybe an hour early, just to have that hour to write before sort of getting a shower, getting dressed, going to work. Depending what stage I was at, sometimes I'd write during my lunch at work, but it depended what I was up to. Like, if I was just doing a bit of editing and it was a pretty scene that I was pretty happy with and just wanted to go over a few bits, that was kind of fine to do at work. But if I wanted to write like a brand new scene, there would like sort of be too many distractions, so I'd have to leave that. And then I'd get home, just say get home about 7 p.m. and I'd let myself have an hour. So the hour, like, get food, watch an episode of something on TV, and then sort of 8 till 10 was when I wanted to write again, to kind of get that done. And then obviously if I had some stuff for uni to do, then that would have to fit into that time as well. So whether I was writing a short story that had to be submitted for that. And it's just being organised, I think, sort of sitting down at the start of the week and going, okay, this is what I've got on this week. I want to get to this stage. I want to get 2 chapters edited or written, or I want to get to this word count. And then just making sure, like, working out how that would fit in.
Talking about word count there, in an ideal 2-hour window in the evening, how much would you get down?
It really varies. I think usually if I sit down for 2 hours, I'd like to get 1,000 words. Sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But yeah, I think like 1,000, I would say, if I'm doing like a first draft, I would be happy with that.
That's quite a thorough writing time. It's quite a condensed, I need to get my work done, a little bit in the morning, and then you've got your 2 hours in the evening. How do you make sure that you are focused? Because it's late at night after a long day at work. How do you make sure that you're focused and you're ready to go come 8 in the evening?
Okay, it's like getting into a habit. So it took a while to do it. And then, because I'm really not a morning person, so in the winters, the getting up an hour early kind of went out of the window. But in summer, it was easy because it was light. So yeah. It depends. Like, if I had like a really good writing session in the morning and I actually did manage to do like 1,000 words in an hour, which did sometimes happen, then I'd be like, okay, well, I'll give myself a night off. So you give yourself like little treats and you don't do that every day. So you give yourself a couple of nights off so that it doesn't become a chore. But, you know, I find it really helpful to just set myself like targets for each week. So if you hit your target early, great. So, you know, go to the gym that night or go to the cinema or, you know, do something, meet up with a friend and do it that way. But then if you get behind, you're like, well, I've built all this time in that I have sort of said to myself is going to be writing time.
You said you were at university at the same time. This was the MA in creative writing. How did doing that affect the way that you told stories, almost learning on the go?
Yeah, so the reason I signed up for it is that I'd written a novel and I'd sent it to about 50 agents and been rejected, but had some like good feedback along the way. So I wasn't, you know, completely demoralized. I thought, well, you know, not this book, but maybe if I can improve the way I write or sort of learn more about the craft or what have you. So I signed up to do them at Birkbeck because it was in the evening. I could do it part time, so it worked around my job, which was really important. And actually, this book came out of that course entirely because the first term we wrote short stories. So I had to write 3 different short stories and then we submit them to a workshop and people would sort of critique them. And I wrote a short story set in 1948 in South London. And everyone was like, but what happens after this? After the end of this story? And I was like, I don't know, this is it. And they were like, no, because we want to know what happens to Laurie. We want to know, you know, he is one day into, because it's, that short story is now a chapter in the novel and it's basically the day after Laurie arrives off the Windrush. And they're like, well, we need to know what happens to him. Like, how does he get a job? Like, what happens with his band? And what happens with this? And what happens with that? And I was like, I don't know. But actually, now that you said that, I'm actually quite interested. So I kind of wrote the novel alongside the course. So sometimes, you know, when I was doing playwriting, for example, it didn't work at all. I was writing something completely different for that. But then in the second year, we went back to sort of working on pieces of work for our dissertation. And I knew that at that point that the novel was going to be my dissertation. So we workshopped different bits through that. So it was actually quite nice. Like, I felt that my writing style improved. I got rid of a lot of the bad habits that I had, sort of like in terms of like exposition and things like that.
Talk to us a bit more about that. You mentioned that you had sent away a book that was rejected a number of times and you went to the course to improve. What would you say did improve?
So one of my worst habit was just exposition and because they say show, don't tell, which, you know, I agree and disagree with.
But, putting a face.
Sometimes you do have to tell a little bit, but I was telling way too much and hadn't quite learnt that skill of sort of less is more or how to show things in a more effective way. So I did get better at that. And when you know that people are going to be reading your work and sort of critiquing it the next week, you're always kind of thinking about the audience a bit more. Whereas before I was just like, well, nobody might read this, so I'll just write whatever I feel like writing and see what happens. So there was that. And I think it just made me a little bit more, I guess, adventurous in trying new things and seeing what worked. And it was kind of a risk-free environment. So if you wanted to try something, it didn't matter if it didn't quite work. At least you know that, you know, you tried that and maybe you could adapt it in some other way. So, yeah, it was interesting to sort of go through that whole experience. I listen to music quite a lot when I'm writing. And I think, especially when I'm writing a first draft, it helps to try and listen to sort of music around, like, certain, you know, it's sort of recorded around the period. So for this book, obviously, Laurie plays clarinet. So I listen to some quite early jazz from, like, the 1930s and 1940s. That kind of, again, really helps. So when you've got the music and then you've got the photographs and it just sort of gets you in the mood to sort of write. I'd also say don't be afraid to like jump about in the novel if you get stuck, because quite often, you know, you're sort of, if you're writing it sort of sequentially, which I usually do, but you know there's a scene that you want to include further on and you're a bit stuck in the bit that you're writing, then sometimes just jumping ahead can really sort of help. Because once you start writing, I think it's sort of easy to come up with the ideas, as you know, once you've sort of got into it. And then another good tip that someone told me really early on was to, when you stop writing for the day, stop in the middle of something, because then when you pick it up the next day, you're already in that sort of flow.
You don't want the blank page staring up at you.
Yeah, so don't ever end a chapter and think, oh, that's me done for the day, because then you've got to start with something brand new and a change of pace or something, and trying to get your sort of head into that sometimes a bit more difficult.
With your 1,000 to 2,000 words that you'd hope to write during a day, do they have to be perfect words for you, or is it just get them down on that first draft?
No, I would say that my first drafts are really trash and I wouldn't show them to anyone. So not even like my agent. I usually write 2 drafts before anyone sees it. The first draft for me is just about getting the ideas down. And then hopefully by the time I've got to the end, there's a plot. Because as I said, I don't really plot that well. So to me, it's just about getting the story down. And also, usually on the first draft, I don't know the characters that well yet. So again, it's hopefully by the end of the first draft, I've got the characters more sort of concrete in my head. I've got the story. I know if the story works. To give you an example, I'm writing my sort of next book at the moment, which is a murder mystery. And it's such a murder mystery that I got to the end and I wrote the killer and then I realised that wasn't the killer afterwards. So I changed it on the second draft. So on a sentence level, it'll probably be draft 3 or 4 before I'll even, you know, go, that sentence is really clumsy. It's just about the story.
Tell me about the murder mystery very quickly. I know you're not here to sell that book, for one. I know, and I know with murder mysteries especially, you don't want to give too much away. Mm. But how did you know that that wasn't the murderer at the time? I've spoken to another author who didn't know who the killer was until the killer opened the door.
Mm.
What do you think's going on there for you? As in, why is the story that you are writing pulling you in a different direction than the story you had originally planned?
For me, it's always the characters. That's what it always comes down to. And I had a really clear idea at the start of who the murderer was. And then I wrote, you know, the first draft. And because obviously what you're trying to do is point the reader in the wrong direction all the time.
Of course, yeah.
Everyone had a motive, basically. But I got to the end and I was like, actually, this person, their motive isn't that great. Like, it's okay. Like, it could work. But actually, this person really has a better motive and actually it'd be a lot more interesting if it was that person. So I decided to change it. So I rewrote, when I wrote the second draft, I rewrote it with that in mind. And I just felt it worked so much better with that person. And actually, because I'd left it all so open and everyone had a motive, I didn't even need to change that much of the story leading up to the reveal, because that person's motive was already in there. So
let me just take you away from that story, because I don't want to go too far down that cul-de-sac. Mm. I guess lastly, just about the writing day, how do you know what you're doing each day? I know that you're not a thorough planner. You said you're not a thorough planner or plotter, but how do you know what you are writing every day?
So hopefully I've been sensible and I'm halfway through a scene. So I'll sort of finish that scene and then I'll think about, because I will have some notes of what I think is going to happen. I tend to more jot down. So I read a really good book called Into the Woods, which is about, it has a lot about sort of the 5-act structure and how you should your novel, if you write a novel or, you know, a screenplay or whatever. So what I try to do is, even if I don't have the whole plot, is at least have sort of the midpoint and some of the, those sort of crucial scenes sort of jotted down. So I know, depending where I am in the book, I know that I need to get between point A and point B in, say, like 20,000 words. So I'll be looking at where I am in that word count. And so I'll be like, okay, well, I need to finish up here. Is it too soon, for example, in a murder mystery to just kill someone right now? Or, like, should I wait? Or, you know, what should just happen? What do I need to have a chapter of reflection if something exciting's just happened? Or, you know, is it, again, a bit slow? Do I need to, like, up the ante? So,
and my very last question about the day, because you mentioned earlier that you've taken a little bit of time off so you could write your second book. I know that quite a lot of authors have found that when they go from working and writing to just writing full-time, they find that moment very tricky to deal with, because suddenly you've got the whole day of a blank canvas to play around with. Especially to go from someone who's quite organised and doing, you know, 2 hours of writing in the evening every day to suddenly have a whole day to play with. How did you find that? How have you found that leap?
I am still trying to work it out. So I'm literally only like 2 or 3 weeks into having all this technically free time. I need to keep reminding myself that
this is
working. Actually my job now. I'm not just giving up work. This is like, you know, writing is my job. What I've tried to do is set myself word counts for each day.
Okay.
And again, if I hit it by 10 a.m., great, I've got the rest of the day off and I can just go out or, you know, just, you know, binge Netflix or something. So I've been trying to do that.
What's the magic number that you are trying to hit every day?
So I'm trying to do 2,000. Okay. Bearing in mind, I've got a whole day. So that's sort of... And I'm editing at the moment, so it's actually quite easy to do that because I'm not necessarily doing new words. I'm just doing different words, if that makes sense. So that seems to be working. So I'm hoping to get that draft finished by the end of this month, which I'm on track to do.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
We'll get more from Louise in just a sec. Now listen, I know it's a time of huge uncertainty and upheaval, so I won't dwell too much on this. It's just this podcast is quite a large chunk of what I do, and that'll all get thrown up in the air as well, I would imagine. I'm going to really try to bring you these as often as possible to keep you company, to keep you inspired while you're writing and while you're at home. And if you can afford to, and I know right now you may not be able to, which is absolutely fine, but if you can afford to, if you'd like to help a lowly freelancer, I'd love some help with this. Just pledge what you can over at patreon.com/writersroutine. I know at the moment too, if you're a fan of a lot of podcasts, they will probably all do this same plea that I'm doing right now, so I just thought I would warn you for that. But if you do have just a dollar or so a month that you could chuck our way, it really does help tide us over at this extremely turbulent time in the world. It helps us bring you as many chats with as many of the greatest writers in the world as often as we can. You get a bookmark, you get some badges thrown in as well. Well, hopefully, if I'm allowed out of the house to post them, but that should be the plan. Little bits of Writer's Routine merch just to say thanks. But if you've been a fan of the show for a while, if any of the tips that we've had so far have helped the way that you tell your stories, I'd love you to just say thanks by chucking a dollar or so a month over to us. You can help. You can do that at patreon.com/writersroutine.
Hi, I'm Sherry LaPena, and I'm the author of Someone We Know, which is out now. And my writing tip is... give yourself permission to write badly so that you don't get stuck. I find when I'm not writing well, I just keep writing. And then if I go back and read it, I'll find the kernel of something that's good there. And then I'll work with that and I'll make it better. So I think the problem with writer's block is that people often feel that it has to be perfect when it goes down to the page. And that's simply not the case. So I think if you want to write a book, just start writing and give yourself permission to write badly so that you can improve.
Right, let's get back to it with Louise Hare then, talking about her brand new novel, This Lovely City. We talk about how thoroughly she plots and how she researched post-Windrush London, and how it was much more complicated than she imagined. Understanding it was quite eye-opening for her, I think. We also learn how much different characters got involved in the story, which she would never have predicted when she first had the idea. We talk about how her novel ended up being like a jigsaw, and how she had to put stuff in the right place, in the right order. And we pick things up talking about those words that she said she tries to write every day. I mean, what happens if they just won't come?
If you're forcing it, I think it's just going to be too difficult. I think in that case, I would just go, let's come back to it tomorrow and see. So I'd just try and make some notes about what I wanted to do in the next day. And then, yeah, because I think sometimes it's just not working. Sometimes you're not in the right headspace. And I think if you try and force it, you're either going to end up with a load of words that you're going to have to delete the next day anyway, or you're just going to get yourself in a bit of a mess. So I always say, if you're not in the mood for it, just, you know, try and get something down if you can. Or even if it's, sometimes I'll just do a bit of researching. So you're doing something towards the book. Like, I think as long as you've got the book in your head, I try and do something on the book every day, even if I don't actually write any new words. So whether it's just having a flick through some websites to look at fashion of the time, or going back through notes and just reading over it. Mm. I think that all counts towards it. So yeah, I think don't be too hard on yourself. If it's not a day to write, then it's not a day to write.
The publishers are going great guns for this. They are pushing This Lovely City. Mm. This is the one of the year, they're saying. And it came from a short story. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you were writing for your uni course. Can you tell me about the very first idea, the moment that you had the very first idea for that short story?
Mm. So it comes from a very specific thing, because there are tours you can do where you can go into like lost tunnels of the underground in London. Yeah. And I did one. There's a deep level shelter underneath Clapham South tube station.
Oh, I know it well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just down the road.
Oh. Yeah, they do tours down there. So obviously it was like an air raid shelter in the war. But I didn't realise until I actually got down there that they actually put Windrush passengers down there. Wow. When they arrived. But the people that didn't have anywhere to go, didn't have family already in the UK. So I was sort of down there, and I did it in, I think it was June. So it was like summer. And it was just really weird to sort of go in from this like bright summer day to going down like this spiral staircase, and you can kind of hear the trains in the distance. And there was just these really long tunnels, and it left like some of the bunk beds up to sort of illustrate what it would have looked like. And I was just like, oh my God, like I wouldn't want to spend a night under here. But imagine if you've just traveled a really, really long way on a boat, which is already weird, and you've landed in, you know, and thought, you know, yes, I'm in, made it to England, and they just shoot you underground in this tunnel. Like, what would that have felt like? So I just made notes when I got home. And I didn't know what it was going to be. And then it was probably about 4 or 5 months later that I had to write a short story for the MA. And one of the things is, you know, you just get given a date where you've got to send this in to the group. And I was like, what do I write? I had no ideas. So I just picked up my notebook and I was going through. I was like, oh, there was that tunnel thing. That would be cool. And then I thought I'd give it a go. And it was just about Laurie's first day. So I thought, I don't need to do a huge amount of research. It's just a short story. I'll just write this guy and his instant regret at having travelled all this way to England. Already hates it, and he's having a really crappy time. So that was the short story.
And then everyone says, I want to know what happens to Laurie. Mm. How do you then turn that short chapter, the short story, this character, that's all it is, it's a character study, really. How do you turn that then into a plot? What happens next?
So I'd had another character, Evie, who's sort of, so those two are the main characters in this book. And I'd been sort of, she was in a notebook for about a year, because I kept trying to come up with something, and I was trying to put her into this sort of murder mystery plot, but it wasn't kind of hanging. I didn't know what happened. So I knew that there was a pond on Clapham Common. I knew that there was a dead baby. I knew that she was there, and I just couldn't get my head around what the plot was. And then, because her story was going to be set in during World War II, basically. And then I was like, well, wait a second, if I put her with Laurie, so just move her story a few years later, put her with Laurie, then what happens if Laurie is involved in this situation as well? And it just suddenly all made sense. And so I knew, so I had the beginning. I had Laurie's scene from 1948. So I was like, okay, so if I write them meeting, and that's then, so basically there are flashback scenes to 1948, and then the main book is 1950. So, yeah, it kind of made sense in my head, and then I tried to write it, and then it didn't make sense anymore. And then it just took lots of tinkering to kind of figure out, because I knew who had done the committed the crime.
Yeah.
So it was just getting, I was like, how does this work? And then playing with the two different sort of time periods, because I knew that what had happened in 1950 was directly as a result of what happened in 1948. So it was just then working out how to slot those different chapters in.
How much did you know about the type of story that it would be? Because as you say, there's a mystery element to it. Mm. That there's obviously this nostalgic feel because of where it is. It's also, there's a bit of social commentary in there too. How much did you know about that, where it would sit on the bookshelf?
Yeah, I really didn't. Yeah, I was really rubbish. I guess I wasn't really thinking about that. Which I think is kind of a good thing. I think if you worry too much about that at the stage that you're writing something, you're going to end up trying to force it to be that thing. I mean, it's difficult talking about it now because everyone's like, oh, what genre is that? I'm like, I don't kind of know. Because it's sort of historical. But a lot of people would say it's not, because it's 1950, it's not far enough in the past to be historical. It's sort of a love story. It's sort of crime, but I don't, like, I wouldn't position it as crime because I think people have expectations of that, it being sort of faster paced and all about the investigation. And actually, most of the book is about the sort of impact on the community rather than anything else. So, yeah, I don't know, but maybe that doesn't matter. I mean, it was a mess for a really long time. Like, it was, I find it really difficult because there's so many, I didn't realise this at the start, but there were so many things going on there. Because I remember, like, a year into writing it, my agent was like, you've picked a really complicated story for your debut novel. And I was like, yeah, well, I didn't realise that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put all this stuff in. So it's just like jiggling it. And then I found as I went along, as the characters developed, they wanted to tell their sort of strand of the story. So once I had everything, it was still in the wrong orders. And then it was like putting everything in the right order. So it was a bit like doing some weird jigsaw puzzle, I think, more than anything.
Over the last couple of years, the Windrush scandal has been pretty prominent in the news. Mm. How much thought did you give about that, about the aspect of the book that is social commentary?
It was a bit weird because basically we were about to send it out to publishers when that happened. So I think it was like the April or May of 2018 when it hit the papers. As far as I was aware, the book was like pretty much done. But I sat down with my agent and we were like, well, really all we want to do, because this obviously the story is set in 1950, it's not set now, but maybe we just need to emphasise a few points. Like, for example, reminding people that these people came over on British passports. So, you know, it's not like they were refugees or, you know, this kind of thing. You know, these people are British, and like the band leader in the story arrives on his own in 1948, but then by 1950 his wife's come over and a couple of his kids, and actually those kids would have been the sort of people that were affected by the Windrush scandal, because they were people that would have come over on their parents' passports and therefore didn't have their own passports and so forth. Hmm. You know, that was a lot of the issue around Windrush scandal. So I think we just wanted to make sure that those things were maybe just pointed out a little bit more than they were, because obviously I didn't have it in my head at all when I was writing the drafts before that. But really, the book was done. Mm. And yeah, it's been really weird. You know, I thought I was writing about this thing in the past that people, you know, I wasn't sure people would be that interested in it. Mm. And then obviously, as soon as that happened, it was like, suddenly it was like, oh, you write a book about Windrush. And I was like, yeah, this is kind of odd. But also, I didn't realise, I was at, because people at work knew that I was writing this book, I'd been writing it for a couple of years, and then people, so then I became like the big Windrush expert. So people at work were like, I never heard of Windrush, and some of them lived in Brixton and walked past Windrush Square every day and were like, I never knew why it was called that. I was like, I felt like everyone had known that already, but obviously they didn't. So I kind of, yeah, it was kind of really weird.
When you're writing about 1950s South London, you know, instantly, as soon as you say that 50s Brixton, you immediately stuff comes to mind about how it would have been, memories that you shouldn't have that don't exist because I wasn't there. You immediately kind of think you were, you know. It evokes a lot. How did you go about painting that picture, telling the story of the place and time and location using words?
I think what I like to include, like, things like the market. So I looked at old photos a lot and tried to work from those. And then I found out where a lot of people would have lived when they first settled in Brixton. So I just kind of had a wander around and just sort of thought, what would have been here that I can use? And then obviously because it was straight after World War II, there's a lot of new buildings there now, which obviously not all, but some of them would have been built because the previous buildings had been bombed. So just making sure that I remember to talk about that, to sort of paint that picture, and remembering that there was no tube there, so everyone would have got buses, and I think there were trams there, but I was like, I can't research trams, that's too difficult, and I think they got phased out around that time anyway, so I was like, everyone's getting the bus everywhere. And from what I could find, there was a really good website, actually. You can find out bus routes and when they started, and like old bus routes. So, but it was quite nice that a lot of the buses that I like still get today around that area were going in 1950. So that kind of made me feel like, you know, I could just do that bus ride and write about that bus ride and what can I see out of the window.
Was it important to you that these facts were correct?
It was really funny because somebody said to me, well, was there a night bus at that time? And I was like, yeah, there was, because I researched it. And I was like, actually, I'm glad that I did research that, because I kind of wasn't that bothered. But then you do want to make sure, like, a night bus would have existed from, you know, how would Laurie have got home from Soho? He would have got a night bus, but was that possible? And I was like, that's like the opening scene, so I should probably check. I don't want someone to read the opening scene of my book and go, well, there was no night bus at that time. There was no such thing. So things like that. You know, I don't want anyone to be taken out of the story by, you know, a blatant error. I think you do need a good, solid opening. You don't want people to be confused by your opening paragraph. It needs to be quite clear. You know, ideally, you know, create a picture or a vision of something. But I did change mine a couple of times, so you know, you can always go back and edit, especially in the first draft. I wouldn't particularly worry about the first paragraph that much, because quite often where you start is not the start of the book. You start somewhere and you're like, actually, I just get rid of that first page because it's just waffle, or it's just me writing into this character or this scene that I'm trying to do.
So you're cracking through your second book right now, kind of coming towards the end of the first draft, and you're clearly someone that has studied the craft of writing. Literally, you have done that. Where do you think there is to go in terms of your writing that you can still grow on? How can you make it, not that it needs to be better, but how can you improve your writing? And also, how can you improve, like, the efficiency of your writing? So your writing day, how can you streamline the whole thing, do you think?
I think in terms of the process, I don't think there's that much in terms of like sitting down and writing, you know, that, I think that's just the same for everybody. I think writing the second book, it is a simpler story because it is just a murder mystery. It's just this character seeing all of this stuff going on around her, freaking out, and then, you know, trying to survive. And, you know, it's a lot. There's a bit of social commentary in there still, but I would say it's very much a murder mystery. So it is. It was quite easy to write a draft and go from the beginning to the end without taking quite as many diversions as I did with the first book. But then the book that I'm thinking about afterwards, I've actually been thinking about for 2 years, and that is really difficult. I think because it's a lot more historical, so I'm going to have to do more research. So I think what I want to improve on is just get braver in terms of the choices that I'm making, in terms of maybe having like multiple narrators or just trying different things, I think is interesting. Different types of narrators, or I'd like to write, because I write in past tense a lot, so I'd like to write something in present tense, maybe see if that works. So yeah, it's just trying different things and keeping it interesting.
Have you been bitten by the bug for all day free time writing? Can you see yourself a few books down the line? This is all you do, just writing the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to make writing my like full-time career, but I'd like to try new things as well. I'd like to, so I started writing a play when I was doing my MA. I never went back and finished it because I find it difficult to write a play and write a novel at the same time because of the structural differences. But I would like to go back and maybe try screenwriting or writing a play and, you know, have a go at different things. And I'd like to get back into short stories again as well, like proper short stories, not ones that turn into books, like full books. So, yeah, there's loads of new things that I would like to try. And I think, you know, if I'm able to sort of fund that with sort of book sales, that would be fantastic. I mean, that's the dream. So we'll have to see how it goes.
And that is it for this week's Writer's Routine. Thank you so much to Louise Hare for telling us more on the show. Her book is This Lovely City. You can get it right now. We'll have a link over at writersroutine.com. I'm being serious what I said earlier, kind of glibly, by the way. It just came to me, but I am being serious. If you have a book out, if you're very frustrated that your events have been cancelled, if you would like to get the word out there, I mean, I can help you out. It's not a massive word, but it will reach a few people. Please do let me know all about your books that are coming out, that you're publishing, perhaps for the first time, and you're so excited. Let me know, and I'll give everyone I can a shout out on the podcast. If you've learned any tips today that will help the way that you tell your stories, please do help us out. Help us carry on in this incredibly turbulent time. Just fire over some pennies to patreon.com/writersroutine. Now, next week, we're talking to Elena Kiriakou about her novel, She Came to Stay. It's a murder mystery with an edge. That'll be next week on the show. You can get in touch in the meantime. Give us a follow on Twitter. We are at writerspod. You can use the contact form at writersroutine.com. And I'd love for you to write a review for the show if you've not on the Apple Podcast Store, by the way. If you've got loads of time, if you're not writing, that's something to keep you busy. Take like a few seconds, to be honest. Just leave Writer's Routine a review over on the Apple Podcast Store. And I will see you next week with Elena Kiriakou. Bye.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.